what I want to do this morning, other than make cracks at the Bears fans, is talk to you, as I have been the last several weeks, about family, going through the series Big Happy Family, and really looking at the ways we interact as a family, talking about that we are a church as a family, and what's coming up real soon that might involve family. Somebody help me. I know that you know the answer. Thanksgiving. Okay, yep, many of you, not all of you, but many of you, we'll get together with family at Thanksgiving. And I know two things that will happen for sure. One, there will be food involved. I mean, whether it's a can of beans or you've got, you know, a table that's 50 feet long filled with ridiculous amounts of food that you might need my help taking care of, that's fine. The second thing that I know will happen is invariably someone, maybe it's your grandfather, maybe it's your crazy uncle, maybe it's your friend that you see every Thanksgiving, maybe it's your brother who talks too much, or your sister who talks too much, or you're a perfect middle child like myself, somebody is going to share a story, inevitably. Can you relate to that? Does this happen when you gather? Somebody shares a story at some point, I mean, tells about what's been going on. Anyone? Just me. Oh, yeah, okay. So I thought I would share this morning a couple of stories with you. The first story I want to share, I just want you to hear this. I want you to receive this. It does not have anything to do with Thanksgiving, but I was regaling my children with it the other night, and they seemed to enjoy it, so I thought I'd share it with you. When I worked for the Robert Bosch Corporation, what seems like so many years ago, I worked with an individual named Jim. And Jim was about the nicest guy you could ever program with. And Jim was pretty good at programming. I worked with one other guy that I had gone to school with, kindergarten through college. We knew each other well. He was also in our group. So there was me, and there was my really good friend Andrew, and there was Jim. So while we all got along occasionally, once in a while, you know, when the moon was in the right phase, maybe twice a year, maybe every day, we harassed the crud out of Jim. And here's what happened. One summer, the Robert Bosch Corporation hired on an intern that we got to know. He was about our age. He went to Purdue, and we were talking with him, and it turns out he was granted for the summer access to every computer on site. He had full privileges and a thorough knowledge of Windows, and he could get to any computer on site. Well, being the trustworthy and loyal employee I was, I said, I will use my time only in diligent manners so as to benefit the company. And I came to this intern and I said, get me access to Jim's computer. Which he gladly complied with. He said, here's what I'll do for you, to me and my good friend. He said, listen, you come up with the plan, I'll make it happen. I'll be the executor, you be the directors. I said, great, and here's what we came up with. Every 15 seconds, and I think if I recall, it was like every 15 seconds, the letter L, M, or R would insert itself wherever the mouse cursor was. I want you to imagine for about 3 weeks what type of emails Jim was sending out. It was as though he couldn't spell at all. Well, don't miss this detail. Jim programmed computers for a living. I think there were two solid weeks, but again, maybe three, where no program he wrote compiled because of the letters L, M, or R that surreptitiously appeared in his code. It was so much fun. We would do projects that took a lot of time to develop, so it's not as though he missed a weekly deadline and was fired, although I probably would have chuckled and explained what happened. But Jim would sit at his computer and send an email and get an email back and say, I didn't type that. He would write a piece of code and he'd say, I don't get this particular module, just won't compile, it won't work, I don't understand. He came by and he asked me, Devin, are you having problems with this particular part of ABAP? And I heard Andrew on the other side, my good friend. No, I don't seem to be having any problems. Well, one day it was dark. Jim liked to work with the lights off. He was in his cubicle. I walked in and he said, something funny's going on. My friend came in and he sat down. He's like, hey, something's going on. And we're like, oh, here it comes, you know. He's finally figured it out. And he's staring at his computer and he's doing this. And I know you can't see well, but he's got this expression on his face. His eyes were narrowed. His lips were pursed. He's... And he says, look at my screen. And he waits and he waits and he waits, L. And he waits and he waits and he waits, M. And he waits and he waits and he waits, R. He goes, you guys had something to do with this, didn't you? Such a good time. The moral of the story is I need access to all the computers in the church. My staff parish chair, Phyllis, can you make this happen? We liked Jim, we got along with Jim, and from that point on, that became one of the stories we could joke about in the office. The people that were in charge of moving our code into production once it was working, they had a good laugh. Like, hey Jim, remember when you couldn't produce any useful code for 3 weeks? People within the office that received emails from him, hey Jim, remember when we thought you were speaking gibberish through email? Maybe you were missing a finger or something? It became one of those stories throughout the office that we would repeat, we would tell, we would share. But let me just share with you a very different story. That's fun, I like that, my kids seem to enjoy it, it's all true. I was thankful Jim was a good enough sport. But let me share with you a very different story. I will never forget the dinner I was sitting down to with my family and my cousins and my aunts and uncles and my grandparents. And I was a little bit older so my parents knew I could comprehend, which was a broad assumption on their part. And I knew my grandpa had served in the war, and I knew he was on active duty. But I did not know, they shared a story, rather I guess my grandpa told the story, about how he and his, forgive me if I don't use the right term, but platoon, unit, group, they were camped out, and they were stationed in unfriendly territory one night. And he said they had no encounters, no difficulties all night. But when he woke up in the morning, there was a full bomb next to his tent. Their location had been discovered, and there had been a bombing raid that was going to hit several areas around him, and 2 feet to the left of his tent was a bomb that did not detonate. And I was sitting there looking at my grandfather. Because of that information, with just a whole new, a profound, like, deep appreciation for the man, the thought that I could be at that table looking at a guy who, by all rights, should have been dead. I always enjoyed my grandfather. I always appreciated them. But just that much more, knowing that story. Stories can be fun, and they can be repeatable. And they can be powerful. Have you ever stopped to consider the information that can be relayed to us in a story? There are stories in the scripture, stories in the Old Testament and New Testament, and I want to share one with you that I find powerful this morning. And it has to do with family. Before I get into this particular story, I want to tell you real quick, catch you up to what's going on, because it's in chapter 22 of a book, so you're not starting at the beginning. But here's the way it went down. Here's how we understand it. God had singled out an individual of all the people on earth, found this individual and made a pact with him, made a promise to him, made, we'll use the word, a covenant with him, an agreement with him. God found this guy, Abraham, and he said, listen, if you will just follow me as your God, if you will do the things that I tell you to do, if you will choose of all the gods that people declare are out there, if you will choose me as your God, I will make you the promise of children, and not just children, but many children. In fact, generations of descendants. In fact, God said, Abraham, if you will but follow me, I will make you the beginning of an entire nation. And I will be your God, and all of your offspring, they will be my people. This is the covenant that Abraham entered into with God. And that sets the tone for a story found in Genesis 22. Remember, God's promise is, I will give you offspring, generations, and entire people. Sometime later, God tested Abraham and said to him, Abraham, here I am, Abraham replied. God said, take your son, Isaac, your only son, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on a mountain I will show you. Really? So the promise is that God will give this man so many descendants that they will be a nation. And God turns around and says, I want you to sacrifice your only son. Interesting. So early the next morning, Abraham got up and loaded his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his only son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance, and he said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there, and we'll all worship when I come back to you. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac. And he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, Abraham, Father? Yes, my son, Abraham replied. The fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the offering that we're going to burn? Surely, Dad, you didn't forget to bring the lamb, right? Hee hee, nervous sweat. Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached his hand and took his knife out to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham! Here I am, he replied. Don't lay a hand on the boy, the angel said. Don't do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld your only son. Abraham looked up, and there in a thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. And to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. That's an incredible story. But maybe you've heard that before, or maybe you've been told that, or maybe you've read it. I want you to think about this story from Isaac's perspective. Picture that story, and picture maybe, you know, 20 years, 30 years down the road when Isaac is telling that story. Maybe he has his family around and they're having dinner. Maybe he's got his extended family there, his children, because Isaac ended up not being killed and having children. And maybe grandpa's there too. Maybe Abraham's there. Can you imagine how that story would go? Hey, kids, how's the food? Yeah, I like it too. Hey, did I ever tell you about the time your grandpa tried to kill me? Mm-hmm. No, I'm not making that up. Yeah, I know, he acts funny sometimes, but he tried to kill me. In fact, he made me carry the ridiculous stuff that would be used to sacrifice me. He did that. And the kids are like, you serious? He's like, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep, went alone, we even had servants, maybe they would have stopped it, but then Dad says to him, you guys stay here, and he leads me up to the place of sacrifice. I saw it on the mountain, like it was the sacrificial altar. And I said, hey, Dad, I think you forgot the lamb, and he looked at me, you've seen him have that look, right, kids? He looked at me, he's like, I didn't forget the lamb. I'm like, oh, he's gonna sacrifice me. Can you imagine that from Isaac's perspective? I mean, have fun with the story. Run it through your head. But can you imagine the story that he would tell? Can you imagine Isaac talking about how his dad almost sacrificed him? That would be something, wouldn't it? I mean, you'd listen to that one. I'll bet those kids are like, whoosh. Don't leave us alone with Grandpa again. Maybe he didn't tell it like that, but I guarantee you, Isaac told that story of how he was almost used as a sacrifice. For one, oral tradition is how the Old Testament was carried on until they had means to write it down. This is written down. I'm pretty certain Isaac didn't write it. For two, the place was named God Will Provide. And at the time people were reading about it, it says it is called to this day the mountain where God will provide. It's likely where we get the attribute of God that we know God as the provider. But as Isaac's children, Jacob and Esau, were growing up, and as Isaac desired to help them learn to worship, as Isaac wanted them to come to know and to trust God, imagine what a pivotal and what a powerful story that was in their lineage. Imagine that story. Funny or serious, take that story that I was almost killed. Kids, you want to know why we worship God and you want to know about the God we worship? Let me tell you a story. I was almost used as a sacrifice, like you've heard from the other nations. They sacrifice children, and we don't do that. Do you want to know why we don't do that, kids? Because God stepped in and provided. The way Dad tells it, the way your grandpa tells it, God made a promise to him, and so that was carried on. But here's what I know firsthand, kids. God provided instead of my life being taken. And imagine, once again, for Isaac, imagine for Abraham going, it wasn't like that, kids. It wasn't like that. Imagine for his children, and then for his grandchildren, and for their children. Imagine that story, that child sacrifice at the time was an acceptable thing. It was a practice. It was around. And our God said, we're not doing that, and I'm going to provide for you. And you will know me as the God who provides. Hey, kids, that's why we worship this God. That's who this God is. This God's character is different from other gods. This God's nature is different from other gods. This is the true God. And this is how I experienced him. Imagine the power in sharing that story. Imagine him sharing how they grew to be a nation and how foundational that story became. Imagine the story being passed on for generations and generations and generations that God made a promise with Abraham. Abraham was tested to the point of being willing to sacrifice his own son, but God provided. So that didn't have to happen. And so there is a nation. Imagine how many times that story got retold, and imagine how it shaped those that heard it. If you knew somebody that told you, this is what God did in my life. This is the powerful way that God stepped in. This is what I know to be true about God, and this is why I worship him. That would have a testimony. Like, that would be powerful. That would have an effect. That would shape people, wouldn't it? Imagine the power of saying to your children or your grandchildren, maybe to your neighbors or your friends, this is what has happened to me. This is who I know God to be firsthand. This is why I worship. If we all told stories like that, that would really make people think. I think it'd be very powerful. And I think Isaac's story was so powerful that hundreds of years later, almost thousands of years later, it was used in a conservative estimate 1,800 years later. I want you to know the story that Isaac told was so powerful it not only shaped a nation, but some 1,800 years later, after Jesus, after Isaac's sons, after Isaac's sons' sons, after how many generations in 1,800 years, there were a group of people sitting around talking about this Jesus they'd heard of. And they were from the Hebrew people. They had descended directly from Abraham and Isaac. And they've heard about this Jesus, and they don't get this Jesus, and that hasn't been a part of their tradition. And if you go to the book of Hebrews, and you read from chapter 11, the author, trying to work with these people that can't understand how Jesus fits in, does something very interesting. He tells a story. And it goes like this. Hebrews chapter 11, starting at verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, offered his son Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had embraced the promises, remember the promise of many descendants? He who had embraced the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be counted. Abraham reasoned that God could even raise the dead, and so it means after this had happened. Children upon children upon children after this had happened. Again, after the Jesus had come around, after Jesus had left, he had been crucified, after people are trying to figure out what was this Jesus event all about and how does it intersect our faith, the author of Hebrews goes back to Isaac's story. The same story is told again, its power so incredible that it begins to shape these people who can't accept the Messiah until they see it's part of their history and it's the same God. And maybe, just maybe, the goodness of God did indeed extend through Jesus. Once more, a story is told that gives the opportunity to tell about who we know God to be and why we worship him. So here's my question. Some of you are saying, that's great. I've read the Old Testament. Wonderful. What's your point? I want to ask you just a couple questions. What stories are you telling? And who are you telling them to? There are stories that you'll laugh about forever and that'll get recirculated, and they're a lot of fun to hear. But are you taking the opportunity to talk about who you know God to be personally? What God has done in your life, how you have been shaped by the God of all the universe, and why you choose to worship that God. Are you telling those stories? Are you passing them on? When you have a time of gathering, when you're visiting with your neighbors, do you stay on this level? Or do you stop and say, there's something I want to share with you at this level? And watch the power that you have. Because of what God has done for you, are you sharing those stories? Who are you sharing them with? So to those of you that don't believe, I have another question. Maybe you're here this morning and you're saying, I don't know about all this. I've heard some of these before and I can't figure out where Jesus fits in with my life, and that's okay. If you're here this morning and you are not convinced that you need to be a part of this Christian thing, let me ask you some questions also. Are you listening to the stories and the wisdom that's being told to you? When your family gets together and maybe they joke about things or maybe they tell stories about you that you wish people wouldn't share, whatever it is, at some point there's a person in your family that has a really powerful story, much like my grandfather, who wouldn't have been there had that bomb next to his tent detonated. Are you listening to those stories? And my other question is, are you asking about people's stories? Because if you're not sure and you don't believe and you don't know, maybe it's time to ask someone. Instead of just being closed off, open up and just say, why? Why this God? Why worship? Why Jesus? Because there are a lot of stories that I think can shape you. And I just want to end this morning with one other story. Can I tell you one other story? We'll put it to a vote. How many of you would like me to shut up? You can raise your hand. I won't hold it against you. Several hands went up. That's okay. Can I share one more story, hands? Share. Okay. I want to tell you about a guy from a church I was at, and we'll give him the name Han. Solo. Han was a really neat guy. And he would be at church a decent amount. But Han came to me one day in my office, and he's like, listen, I just want to get this out of the way. I'm just going to air this out so that we're on the same page. I'm like, well, this is a good start. He said, I don't believe what you believe. I may not know what you know, but I don't believe what you believe. I have so many questions and so much experience that causes me to kind of doubt. I just can't take all the things that you're offering and that you're saying. And he says, you know, there are a lot of good people here, and I'll keep coming to church, but I can't buy what you're selling. This Jesus, it's not for me. I was like, that's fine, hon. I said, what are your questions? And he asked the big questions that nobody actually has all the answers to, except me. But seriously, those questions of life that, like, you have to go so deep and you can only conjecture at a point, and who truly, really knows the mind? I said, I can't answer all those. I said, but here's what I can do. If you will give me the opportunity to talk about how I feel about those and my understanding, and if you'll let me explain why I believe what I believe, I'll do my best to help you understand at least the way I see things. And we had a great conversation that day. And then I followed up with Han maybe a month or two later, and he asked some more really hard questions. And we talked about them. And many, many, many conversations, times to hang out, questions, answers, lack of answers, many of those later, I was thrilled. I mean, it made my heart happy to see Han become a leader in our church, to see him growing not only in faith, but in confidence that he too had a story to share with others, maybe not those answers, but a story that intersected Jesus Christ, that he thought was important enough to share with someone else. And as I was leaving that church, Han said to me, I can't thank you enough for the faith that you helped me with. And I said, hey, it's not me. God works in all of us. He said, no, I know you're a humble guy, but I want you to hear, I can't thank you enough. And he said, for the family that you've helped me raise in faith. What stories are you telling? What stories are you listening to? Who are you talking with? You have the ability to receive or to share your intersection with the God of the universe, and that can change someone's life.